Students of independent cinema may be aware of the pioneering work of Shirley Clarke, but for most of Clarke's life, she remained unknown to the mainstream movie culture. Milestone Films is hoping to reignite interest in Clarke with a series of recent theatrical and home video releases. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Shirley Clarke made groundbreaking films for more than three decades, beginning in the early 1950s, and was a rare female filmmaker within the 1960s independent film movement in America. Her work is being championed by Milestone Films through an ongoing release schedule of titles under their Project Shirley collection, and I'm delighted to have Milestone Films' co-founder, Dennis Doros, on the program today. Good morning.
Hi, Charles. Thank you for having me.
It's wonderful to hear your voice again. I should mention you're joining us by telephone from your office in New York. This is a great year for independent cinema lovers, certainly with the growing availability through your company, Milestone Films, of the work of Shirley Clarke in your Project Shirley collection. But I gather for most or many film lovers, Shirley Clarke may remain a name that's probably new to them. Who was Shirley Clarke, and why are you championing her films?
Shirley Clarke was an amazing woman. She was born in 1919 to a very wealthy family in New York and became a dancer in the 30s. She was dyslexic and had studying problems, and when she found dance, she found herself. And she married young to get out of the house and had a daughter, and by the 1950s, she found herself in her 30s with a fading dance career, and she turned to film, and it was a brilliant idea. She was a genius at movement, at editing, at life. And the dance film she made in the 50s had great acclaim. And then she tried testing herself with a feature film in 1961, The Connection, which was a stage play by Jack Gelber. And it was an extremely risky move. You have to think, in 1961, the new American cinema was started with signatures from 25 directors. And one of them was a woman, and that was Shirley Clarke. She was always stuck out as the woman in a man's world.
Mm-hmm. The term groundbreaking, I think, is perhaps overused these days, but it certainly seems to fit both this filmmaker and her films.
Yeah, not only was she a woman, but she was also a gutsy filmmaker. I mean, she made films that nobody else could have made, about drug addicts, about poor in Harlem, about a gay drag performer in New York. Her films were unsettling, and her real theme of her films was the blurring of fiction and nonfiction, and so it made the audiences uncomfortable, perhaps.
Which was groundbreaking in around 1960, and that, you know, up until then, and even for a while longer, when we saw documentaries, we thought they were truly portraying reality. And many of her films, as you mentioned, are blurring those lines. The Connection, which you mentioned from 1961, is one of the titles that you've restored and released, and about it's a fictional director who's making a film about drug addiction with actors playing drug addicts waiting for a score. Yet the way it's made is certainly has a documentary feel to it.
First, she hired the people who had done the play, the Living Theater original cast, including the great Jackie McLean and the pianist Freddie Redd. And they were dealing with drugs, and they were dealing with the lifestyle, and they had performed on stage for 3 years, so they were so... Their performances really came from their lives, and the performances were so ingrained after the 3 years of off-Broadway that they really took on the roles, and they really seemed real.
And, of course, the subject matter was fairly scandalous for its time.
Yeah, there was no other films where drug use was considered a reality rather than the poor, tragic, dying man. So this is a case where it's non-judgmental, and it really shook up a lot of people. And in fact, when the play opened, people thought they were seeing reality, that these were real drug addicts getting high on stage, which was not the case, of course.
You mentioned most of our films deal with people on the fringes or parts of society that we weren't used to seeing on the screen. I guess her closest brush with mainstream success, or at least recognition, was the Academy Award she won for Best Documentary Feature in 1963 for a film about Robert Frost.
Yeah, even then she had difficulties making it. She was taken off the project halfway or later on through the filmmaking. And she did consider it a badge of honor winning the Academy Award for Best Documentary. she, however, every time tried to get into Hollywood or tried to consider mainstream cinema, she just refused. She was courted, she considered it, and realized it wasn't for her.
Because it would be too restrictive?
Yes, I think she really wanted to challenge audiences. She really wanted to be herself. She loved Felix the Cat. She loved Fred Astaire. She would have probably loved to have made a Hollywood movie, except she just couldn't.
And of course, things were changing even in Hollywood in the 60s. You mentioned earlier Portrait of Jason, the film from 1967 about an African-American hustler and manservant and cabaret performer, houseboy, as he puts it in the film. I think this really epitomizes kind of her approach. This is filmed over 12 hours in, I gather, her apartment with a single individual, Jason, the Jason of the title, just monologuing and giving a recitation of the challenges and triumphs of his life. And as it goes on, as the film goes on, you're not quite sure if he's performing for the camera and this is part of some elaborate stage act of his, or if he's actually bearing his soul. And by the end, he's literally just spent and weeping.
Yeah, Warhol had been doing these kind of films for the last year or two before she started Portrait of Jason, but they were mostly real portraits of people, and they were trying to create a reality on film. Shirley's view was that she took somebody who was a great storyteller, Jason Holliday, mm-hmm. and wanted the audience to try to decide for themselves what was real, what was fictional, what was reality as you're watching the film. She spent 9 months editing those 12 hours of footage into a film that looks completely unedited. Mm-hmm. It looks like outtakes.
Right.
And so the audience is completely thrown for a loop because it doesn't look like any other film ever made. And I have to say that Jason Holliday was the perfect choice for the performer interview subject because he told stories of racism, of parental abuse, drugs, that was extremely upsetting for the time and still is today.
Often laughing through some of his dialogue, but in a way that seems very close to crying. You can see the toll that life and growing up in America at a time when being a black man and working in the conditions he did, you know, was very difficult. And while he on the surface seems to be laughing about some of the stories he's telling, it's clear that there's great pain there underneath it.
He is very forthright about his stories. Shirley presented copies of James Baldwin's short stories to the crew before she shot the film, and you can see why. It's very similar to James Baldwin's short stories. At the same time, as he is so open and so truthful, you can't tell if he is performing or if he's telling the truth, and that is a real striking thing at a great moment in the film when it gets very tense and he's crying. Carly says, "Oh, stop it, you're lying." And he says, "Yeah, you're right." And so it's really hard to tell which is truth and not, and so audiences come into the film not knowing what to expect, and they love the film or they hate the film, and the next night they can see it again and have a completely different reaction.
It's fascinating, too. You mentioned the off-camera dialogue that she's also playing with the notion, or attacking the notion of documentaries, that somehow this reality is simply being observed by the filmmaker. And in the case of Portrait of Jason, you often hear the crew shouting out or speaking to him, and often it's Shirley Clarke egging him on or asking for another story and reminding him to tell this story. And it's very clear that, you know, there is a relationship there between the people behind the camera and those in front of it.
Exactly, and she plays with that in the connection in the fictional film where the mm-hmm. documentary director says, it has to be real, you have to do what you do every day. By the way, stand over there. Portrait of Jason is much more a take on cinema verite. She grew up with D.A. Pennybaker. They started working together in the 50s. She mm-hmm. was with Leacock. She knew all the cinema verite people. She worked with them. She loved them. At the same time, she wanted to play with the idea. She wanted to poke fun at them, too. What's real and what's not real. You think this is real, but let me change your view of it instantly. It was, as I said, extremely courageous filmmaking.
I'm wondering, the four feature titles that you've released so far, along with some of her shorts, we mentioned, do tend to develop portraits of people on the fringes, people that we don't normally see in the cinema. And I'm wondering if you think she was drawn to those kinds of stories because she saw herself as a female filmmaker, even within the independent film movement, which was a little more progressive than the mainstream film movement, but was drawn to those types of characters because she herself saw herself outside of the norm that she was working in.
Yeah, she definitely grew up in the comfort of society. I mean, her parents and her grandparents were very wealthy. But as a woman who was dyslexic first in school, as I said, and as a woman trying to make it in a society that was very male-dominated filmmaking, she did see herself as an outsider, and she did portray the characters. She said basically they were all her, except she didn't have the courage to point the camera at herself.
Hmm. Shirley Clarke died in 1997. That goes back to, that was after the founding of Milestone Films, which I think turns 25 next year. Did you know Shirley Clarke?
No, my wife Amy did. She was an assistant at New Yorker Films, where Shirley would call up for the prints she needed to show at schools. So we have a lot of friends who were best friends with her, who knew her well. We've gone through her diaries, her home movies. It seems like we know her, but no, she's elusive in many ways, even to her best friends, because she could be so dynamic and so charming and so brilliant, and everybody loved her. At the same time, it was tough to like her at times. She was very forthright in her opinion.
Mm-hmm. And had to have been tenacious to make films at the times that she was making films.
It was a man's world, as I said, and it was a tough world for any filmmaker, even today, of course.
I wonder if she'd be surprised at just how hard it still is for women to make films.
I think she would be surprised. At the same time, she would recognize that some things don't change.
If her films are about people that come from the fringes or are on the fringes, they're also occasionally about triumph. And her last feature film, Ornette, Made in America, which you've just released on DVD and Blu-ray, brings it back, the story back to Texas, in that this is a documentary, a portrait about Ornette Coleman, the iconic composer and jazz musician who grew up in Fort Worth on the segregated side of town, and sort of tells his story through his music, and it takes a very interesting form. Shirley Clarke not only made the film over many, many years, but edited it to work with Ornette Coleman's particular brand of free jazz.
As I said, she was a brilliant editor and a brilliant filmmaker, and her films take the shape of their subjects.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, you don't even notice this. The films are extremely engaging. They move very quickly because she was so brilliant at putting the films together. They're a joy to watch in terms of filmmaking. Ornette was a character just like her. He was on the fringes of society, wanting to create something that nobody had ever seen before. Or heard before, of course. And he was brilliant, innovator, just like Shirley was. And they really found themselves to be companions in this way.
And it's also a look at poverty and racism, segregation, themes that run through a number of her films. A number of her films are about the African-American experience in America. Even though she was white and came from some privileged background, that seems to be a theme. A lot of what distinguished her work, I think, can be found in that final film, Ornette. I wonder if you would agree with that.
I think all her films are very much of her life, of herself.
Mm-hmm.
She put herself totally into each film. Her editing of the film is free jazz. I mean, she did understand it. She loved jazz since she was young. She loved the musicians. She loved the people. She loved the milieu. And she loved Ornette. I mean, you can tell how much fun Ornette was having making the film.
Milestone Films is one of those rare distributors. You've created a company that's found longevity and success while, like I said, adhering to a fairly strict focus and a very personal one that's you've created with your wife and partner, Amy Heller, a catalog of film titles and filmmakers that may not have found a home anywhere else. You're coming up on your 25th anniversary next year. I wonder if you ever imagined that your initial vision would have blossomed into a company, the company you have today?
Oh, my God. Yes, absolutely, that we started the company thinking we were going to be a great success.
That's
really true. And then we found out how hard it is. So I have to say, every year is a struggle, and every year we're going to say, are we going to make it again? But right now we're doing well, and we're loving the work we have. We have a huge number of projects coming up. So I remain optimistic about it, but I always fool myself that way.
Well, it's great that your passion continues, and I know the power of rediscovery drives you on. Are there more titles coming in the Project Shirley collection?
Yes. Robert Frost will be coming out with a series of DVDs called The Magic Box Volume 4, which will be an incredible amount of footage, maybe 8 hours, 10 hours of work of Shirley's, her short films, Robert Frost, her home movies, her unfinished work, which is just incredible. Work with the great choreographer Anna Sokolow that nobody has ever seen before. So there's a huge amount of surprises in that DVD.
I'll look forward to it. Well, it's an important work that you and Amy Heller are doing, and I'm thankful that so many distinct cinema voices are available on home video because of your advocacy and efforts. Thank you for speaking with me today about Shirley Clark.
Well, thank you very much, Charles. It's a lot of fun.
I've been discussing the life and work of one of the American independent film movement's most unique pioneers, Shirley Clark, with Milestone Films' co-founder, Dennis Doros. Milestone Films has recently restored and released a number of Shirley Clark's groundbreaking films, and you can learn more about Clark and find current and future releases on home video at milestonefilms.com. On Films producer is Norma Martinez. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.